Let's face it, marriage relationships can be difficult. Husbands and wives struggle to understand each other many times. And men, we are, quite frankly, especially difficult to understand. Our wives try very hard to figure us out, but they don't understand us too well. They do it because they love us. Ladies, I can tell you that we men don't understand you either, by the way. It's a two-way street. Marriage is the intersection of two God-designed, created genders becoming one. That's never easy. So this week, in 1 Peter chapter 3, we will look at the wives in 1 Peter chapter 3, verses 1 through 6. Next week, I'm going to talk to the husbands. So ladies, make sure your husbands are here next Sunday. How's that? Be a real incentive. They need to be here next week. But today we're talking to the wives. God calls wives to follow the ways of Christ. The chapter division really is unfortunate here because verse 1 is a follow-up to verses 21 to 25, which we looked at 2 weeks ago now because we were in church camp last weekend. 2 weeks ago, we looked at Christ's example in verses 21 to 25. Christ's example is an example of submission, of surrender, without fighting to the authorities as he died on the cross for each and every one of us. He voluntarily submitted himself to suffering and to struggle. Now, the follow-up in verse 1 of chapter 3, if you strike out the chapter division, is in the same way, wives. So, God calls wives to follow Christ's example of sacrifice in the marriage. And there are three principles that we can look at for wives. Number one, release your rights to win your husband. Let's look at verses 1 and 2. In the same way, you wives, be submissive to your own husbands, so that even if any of them are disobedient to the word, they may be won without a word by the behavior of your wives, of their wives, as they observe your chaste and respectful behavior. Now, as I read these verses, I'm sure that some women are immediately becoming defensive. The walls are starting to go up. You don't know my husband. So hear me out, ladies. Submission does not mean that women are inferior to men. The Bible is very clear. Women and men are equal in Christ. Submission does not mean that men have the right to be abusive or dictatorial over women. That is sin. And we will deal with that one next week when we talk to the husbands. We have to understand four important issues with respect to the submission of wives in a marriage, because that's the point of verses 1 and 2. Wives, release your rights to win your husband. Four little issues that we need to understand. The first one is, wives submit here as a part of a spiritual ethic of submission that we all are supposed to exhibit in our lives. You have to look at the context of this passage. This is not a command in this verse. This is, actually in the Greek text, it's a participle. It's a subordinate construction as we start out in chapter 3. Thank you. I was getting ready to ask for that, actually. So it's the continuation of a theme. And the command to submit is all the way back in chapter 2 and verse 13 of 1 Peter. Here's the command. Submit yourselves for the Lord's sake to every human institution, whether to a king as the one in authority or to governors, and he goes on. It's a broad command for all Christians to submit. The ethic of submission is a part of every Christian's life. All authority, every human institution. And then Peter is beginning to break that down. And the first example he uses is verse 18. Servants, be submissive to your masters. Or as we applied it, employees, be submissive to your employers. That's his first application of this submit to people in authority. Then we have the example of Jesus in verses 21 to 25, who is the supreme example of what it means to submit to the suffering and struggle that goes on in this sin-filled world. It is the ethic of submission. Then we come to chapter 3 and verse 1. In the same way, then, as Jesus, and as I told employees to submit, and as I told everyone to submit, wives, in chapter 3, verse 1, wives, you submit in the same way as Jesus. He's your example. But it doesn't stop there, because you drop down to verse 7, where we deal with husbands. You husbands, in the same way. Same expression. In the same way as Jesus submitted, you husbands submit. It is a continuation of the submit to authority principle of 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 13. So husbands too must practice an ethic of Christian submission. And we will talk about what that looks like next Sunday. So in that context, wives are submitting in a setting where everyone submits in different ways. It is the ethic of the Christian life, just as Jesus did. Secondly, the submission must be voluntary, not coerced. The Greek construction probably should be translated the way the NIV does here. Wives, submit yourselves to your own husbands. Submission is a voluntary thing. It is a choice that wives make to submit. It cannot be demanded. It can only be given. Abusive and domineering husbands are sinful and unbiblical. God designed marriage to be a relationship where wives freely release their rights, their self-centered rights, to their husbands as an act of loving submission. It is a choice that wives make. Husbands cannot demand that. The Greek construction says the wives choose to give that in the marriage. Author Jill Briscoe writes, submission isn't sitting down on the outside while you're standing up on the inside. That's not submission. That's coercion. It is a choice to give myself to my husband. Submission, third, is within the marriage. Peter tells wives to submit to their own husbands. It's not a call for women to be social doormats in a culture, in any culture. It does not mean that women must be submissive to men in the world of work, government, or social settings. There are other passages of Scripture that deal with each of those things. It doesn't mean that a woman cannot be president, for example. We got a couple running. So, four, there are exceptions to the submission when we look at the Scriptures as a whole. In this context, it's just sort of a blanket thing. But we already looked when we were in 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 13 at this submit to government or submit to authority. And we're very quick when we say submit to government to say, well, there are exceptions to that. There are times when Christians should not submit to government. It is an act of civil disobedience. And we always cite the verse in Acts that we ought to obey God rather than men. So whenever government asks you or me to perform sin, to do something sinful or deny Jesus Christ, then we have to obey God rather than men. And we're quick to authorize that exception. The same exception goes for wives. Wives have to obey God rather than men first. So, and Peter is writing to a culture where many wives had come to Christ whose husbands were not Christians, and they might make demands on them. And you are to submit, you are to give yourself freely, but your husband cannot ask you to sin. You have to obey God. Or deny Christ, you have to obey God first. So there is an exception here as well. Anytime we are asked to sin or go against God, then we must obey God first. So wives, the best way, Peter says, to win your husbands, even if they are being disobedient to God, is to submit yourselves to your husbands without sinning yourself, of course. You will win your husbands by your behavior, not your words. When you are critical, controlling, you will not win your husband to the Lord. It won't happen. You will drive him away from God. Or one who is being disobedient. Peter says that you can win your husband without a word by how you live. Imagine that, ladies. Winning without a word. I probably better just leave that one. But you will never win your husband by pointing out all his flaws or trying to control his behavior with your words. Peter says, without a word. How do you live submissively? Peter tells wives here. Verse 2 says that wives win their husbands by a pure and respectful way of life. Purity, of course, means no moral defect or failure. No sinful impurity. You are pure as a wife. Respectful means to reverence, to respect, to honor. Now, Peter's theme is that this is the way anyone wins anyone to Christ. He will say down in 1 Peter chapter 3 and verse 15, "But sanctify Christ as Lord in your heart, always being ready to make a defense to everyone who asks you to give an account for the hope that is in you, yet with gentleness and," same word, "respect." That's how we treat people, period. Wives now have that applied to them in the marriage relationship. It is an enduring lifestyle of all Christians applied to wives in the context of marriage. Pure and respectful in how you relate to your husband. That's how you submit. It doesn't mean you can't disagree with a husband, but you do so with purity and with respect. I find it interesting that even in the secular world, we are seeing similar ideas, because marriages are breaking apart. Former professional volleyball star and fitness expert Gabriella Reis recently, or a couple of years ago actually, revealed her secret to creating a successful marriage. She did so on the Today Show. Her secret? Submission. Reis explained that she and her pro surfer husband, Laird Hamilton, considered divorcing after 4 years of marriage. Now, at that time, their 17-year marriage, I did check, and they're still married, so their 19-year marriage now is solid. Her initial comment came from her book, "My Foot is Too Big for the Glass Slipper." And here's what she said in that book. I haven't read the book, so I don't know what else is in the book, but "To be truly feminine means being soft, receptive, and look out, here it comes, ladies, submissive." Reis stands 6'3" tall. She is a powerful athlete, not a doormat at all. So far as I know, has never expressed faith in Christ, neither her nor her husband. But she goes on to explain how submission works on her side of the marriage, and it sounds a lot like 1 Peter.
I think the idea of living with a married partner is how can I make their life better? So if I'm the woman and he's the man, then yes, that's the dynamic. I'm willing and I choose to serve my family and to serve my husband because it creates a dynamic where he is then in fact acting more like a man and masculine and treating me the way I want to be treated. I think because women have the ability to set the tone, that the ultimate strength and showing real power, I believe, is creating that environment. I think it's a sign of strength. Submission, a sign of strength in a marriage. A choice that a wife makes out of a position of power and strength to serve her husband. Next week we'll flip it around, men, and we'll learn what it means from the other side. Second principle this morning, make your inner woman beautiful. Make your inner woman beautiful. Actually, interestingly enough, in the Greek text, it's make your inner man beautiful, ladies. But person will say, verse 3, your adornment must not be merely external, braiding the hair and wearing gold jewelry or putting on dresses, but let it be the hidden person, the inner person, the secret person of the heart, with the imperishable quality of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is precious in the sight of God. In a 2008 article for Psychology Today magazine, Hara Murano writes about this incredible pressure that is that young ladies, girls are facing concerning their image and their image obsession today, which is leading or has led to an epidemic of eating disorders among young women. And his mansion, I know, deals with this issue a great deal among young women. It is a huge issue. In fact, it was estimated in 2008, so that's a few years ago now, but it was estimated that 40% of college-age young women struggle with eating disorders. 40%. Why? Such an obsession with an artificial standard of beauty that we have created in our culture. One 17-year-old young lady called Chloe put it this way in the article. You compare yourself to other people, she said. Each of my friends was vying to be better than the other. I was in a restaurant with my boyfriend and a girl walked in who was really pretty and much thinner than me. I saw him glance at her. I went into the bathroom and cried. Boys are constantly comparing women to each other. That girl is really hot. She's so much hotter than her friends, so we compete to be the hotter friend. An obsession with external beauty. And the article goes on to argue, secular article now, Psychology Today, goes on to argue that much of this problem comes from the family unit where the girls grow up. Girls are learning these attitudes about beauty growing up. Moms are modeling the attitude of the culture with respect to beauty by encouraging their girls to look and act like everyone else, to be successful, to be viewed as pretty. Dads are failing to teach their daughters to accept themselves for who they are and be strong in their own skin. This is what the article said their research shows. Television and movies have influenced the views of young ladies who see beauty modeled in unhealthy ways. Guys reinforce the notion of beauty by treating women in sexist ways. And all of that pressure is coming to bear. The result is that many young women feel intense insecurity over their looks. And they try to conform to what the world calls beauty. It's sad. It's horribly destructive. And we're all a part of that problem in our culture. Real beauty, Peter says, is internal, not external. That's what Peter is teaching here. Now, women were under great pressure in the first century as well to keep up with all the latest fashions, It isn't anything new. They would braid their hair. Peter's talking about it here. They braid their hair in elaborate ways. Jewelry and clothing were very important to achieve the right look. That was true in the first century. And every culture has its own set of guidelines for beauty. In fact, each generation has its own set of guidelines for beauty. Within the culture, stereotypes of beauty pressure women because, let's face it, many, many women will never fit those stereotypes. You know what God says? That's okay. You don't have to fit the stereotype. Our stereotypes of beauty are not important because they are external, not internal. Inner beauty is always far more important than outer beauty, especially to God. In fact, he says here, inner beauty is precious to God in women. Now, everybody wants to look good, but there is an outer beauty and there is an inner beauty, and the inner beauty, ladies, is way more important. It's a beauty of the heart, a beauty of character. Does God care what you wear? Well, yes, but not quite in the same way you might think. God cares what you wear because what you wear should express your inner beauty. Cultivate your inner woman. Dress her up. Know that the inner is more important than the outer. Your inner woman is more precious to God than your outer looks. And I wish I could get that through to any young lady. It is far more important to care about your inner beauty and to have your clothing, your jewelry, your makeup, all of these things reflect a beautiful person. That is what God cares about. I mean, let's face it, you can only do so much with your outward looks anyway. I didn't really quite mean that to be funny. You got to get off that one right away. But your external beauty is not going to last forever. I mean, Peter's talking about that here. Your internal beauty, he says, is imperishable or incorruptible. It does not decay. It can't fail. So cultivate the internal beauty that is incorruptible, lasts forever. And you do that by cultivating a gentle and a quiet spirit, Peter says. A gentle and a quiet spirit. The word gentle means humble or considerate, caring about someone else. Considerate. Jesus called himself gentle, Matthew 11:29. Once again, he's our example. A humble or considerate spirit. The word for quiet does not mean that you can't talk. That's not what the Greek word means. The Greek word means to have a peaceful or well-ordered spirit about you. Peter is not telling women to stop talking, which is a good thing. We husbands need to hear from you. He is telling wives to have an orderly, disciplined spirit that lives with a peaceful attitude about life. Not agitated, not getting all wound up about everything that happens, but to have a well-ordered spirit. A peaceful attitude. Inner beauty is humble. It is considerate of others. It is peaceful. It is a well-ordered spirit. These are the qualities that Peter is talking about, and they are far more important than the latest fashion trends or makeup that you might put on. Marion, writing an editorial in today's Christian Woman magazine, told this story about an experiment she carried out on herself, actually with her husband's encouragement because he was challenging her on her makeup. She committed to wearing no makeup for 30 days to see what kind of reaction she'd receive from the people in her life. No makeup at all for 30 days. Now, some of you are starting to look like this, you know. She was sure her coworkers would look at her and either judge her appearance with disapproval, or they'd ask her if she was feeling sick. You know, what's wrong with you? You don't look so good. She said the first week was the hardest week. She avoided making any eye contact with people because she felt embarrassed. Every time she looked at herself in a mirror, she said, she withdrew with disgust and often said out loud to herself, "You're ugly," as she looked at herself, unattractive. To make up for that insecurity, she started to concentrate on smiling more, as much as she could, and initiating conversations with people, asking them about their lives and what was important to them to take the focus off of herself. She said she desperately wanted to get comfortable in her own skin. But how could she when she felt so ugly? Somewhere during week two, she began to realize something, that how she looked had nothing to do with who she was. After her 30-day boycott of all makeup, she began sharing her experience with a few close friends. She still likes wearing makeup, so we're not saying you can't wear makeup. But she writes, "I've experienced such freedom in not wearing makeup, mainly because I feel released from the struggle to be pretty." Inner beauty. Now, I'm not suggesting that wearing makeup is sinful. Please, don't get me wrong. And Marion went back to wearing makeup. I am saying that there is a beauty in each of you ladies that is far, far more important than the beauty from a bottle. And I encourage you, I plead with you to focus on that, to work hard, to work just as hard on the beauty of the heart as you do on the beauty of the face. For that inner beauty is precious to God and beautiful to the rest of us. Third principle, become attractive through loving obedience. Verse 5, "For in this way, in former times, the holy women also who hoped in God used to adorn themselves, being submissive to their own husbands, just as Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord, Master, and you have become her children if you do what is right without being frightened by any fear." Now, the Greek word that's translated "adorn themselves" here in this verse meant to make themselves more attractive by putting on color. Literally, that's what it means. By decorating. That's makeup. To make themselves attractive by putting on color or decorating themselves. In other words, the makeup holy women in the past used was the makeup of a submissive spirit to their husbands. That's how they adorned themselves. So Peter then goes on to talk about the example of Sarah. Sarah was considered by Jewish tradition to be one of the most beautiful women in the world. You remember from our study of Genesis that twice Abraham told her to say that she was his sister because he was afraid that the king would see her and kill him so he could have this beautiful woman. In fact, twice the kings took Sarah for themselves until God put a stop to it. So Sarah was drop-dead gorgeous. But Peter tells us that her real beauty was found in obeying Abraham, whom she called master. She followed her nomadic husband far away from home as he wandered all over the Middle East. And as Abraham made a batch of really stupid decisions, and there she is, still following, affected by them, obviously, but a submissive spirit. Now, I can hear some women in this room, or maybe they were listening outside, certainly, saying, "You are crazy, Pastor. I'm not going to surrender myself to anyone like that." Other people might be thinking, "Look, Pastor, my husband is abusive, and I might end up beaten or dead if I follow your advice." Well, the women in the first century had similar fears. As Peter notes here, you see at the end of the verse, he says, "I want you to do this without being frightened by any fear, terrified." Furthermore, let me just say this. I would never, ever tell a woman to stay with a man who is abusing her and she fears for her life. I would say to you, and if you're here this morning and you're in that situation, I would say to you, get out and be safe first. Then we'll work on the problems, the issues. But Peter's not addressing those kinds of very serious situations here. He's addressing in general the situation. And other than those kinds of very serious situations, I would encourage you to follow Sarah's example. And how can you do that without fear? Because it's terrifying to surrender to someone else. How do you do that without fear? Again, I'm not talking about an abusive situation here, folks. If that's your situation, then please, let's get help. But in general, even with decent husbands, it's terrifying to surrender yourself to someone else. How do you do that? Well, the key is found in that little clause in verse 5, because Peter is saying he doesn't want you to surrender in terror or in fear, terrified for things. That's not the way this is supposed to work, without being frightened, he says. But in the middle of verse 5, we have a little expression that makes it possible. Who hoped in God? Where's the hope? It's in God. Who are you trusting, your husband or God? You're trusting God, not your husband. Because let's face it, we're cads. Or we can be. We're selfish, flawed, sinful people too. So the only way that you're going to be able to surrender as a wife and release yourself to someone else, to your husband in this case, the only way you can release yourself to a husband is like the holy women of old, you hoped in God. God's your hope. Put your hope in Him to make all things right in His time, to straighten things out. That's what Sarah had to do as she wandered around the Middle East, following her husband into some stupid decisions. She had to say, "I'm hoping in you, God. I'm trusting you will take care of this eventually," and that's what every wife has to do. Your hope is in God, not your husband. That God can deal with the issues. And that's the only way you're going to be able to deal with the conflicts and the challenges of marriage, is by putting your hope in God. There once was a couple who had been married for 60 years. They had not kept any secrets from one another except for a small shoebox that the wife kept in the top shelf of her closet. When they got married, she put the box there, and she asked her husband never to look inside of it and never to ask questions about its contents. And there it had stayed for 60 years. They had a wonderful, loving relationship. He actually forgot all about it. But then, one day, she was in the hospital, very, very sick, and the doctors said that she would likely die. And he went home, and he started getting things in order, and he remembered the shoebox. And so he took the shoebox down from the top of the closet, and brought it into her in the hospital. And he asked her if perhaps now they might be able to open the shoebox. And she agreed. They opened the box, and inside were two crocheted dolls and a roll of money that totaled $95,000. The man was totally astonished. The woman told her husband that the day before they were married, her grandmother gave her advice, said that if she and her husband were ever to get into an argument with one another, they should work very hard to reconcile. And if they were unable to reconcile, she should simply keep her mouth shut and go crochet a doll. The man was really, really touched by this because there were only two crocheted dolls in the box. And he was amazed that over 60 years they'd only had two arguments that they couldn't reconcile. And tears came to his eyes, and he grew even more deeply in love with this wonderful woman. And he asked her about the money. What about the money here? And his wife said, well, every time I crocheted a doll, I sold it to a local craft fair for $5. And she kept her mouth shut. Marriage can be tough. You all know that. What helps a marriage thrive? By following God's ways. And we'll look at the husbands next Sunday. John Gottman, one of the world's leading researchers on marriage relationships, and in the curriculum that I use in premarital counseling, they often refer to John Gottman. He's one of the researchers that's done a lot of work on marriage relationships. And he said that he looks for two things in a marriage to determine the potential for success. John Gottman said you look for either contempt or kindness. By the way, isn't it interesting that throughout this whole passage there's not one word about love? He said you look for contempt or kindness to determine the success of a marriage. And here's what the research has found. Contempt is the number one factor that tears couples apart. People who are focused on criticizing their partners miss a whopping 50% of positive things their partners are doing, and they see negativity when it's not there. People who give their partner the cold shoulder, deliberately ignoring the partner or responding minimally, damage the relationship by making their partner feel worthless and invisible, as if they're not there, not valued. And people who treat their partners with contempt and criticize them kill the love in the relationship. Contempt, number one factor in destroying relationships, particularly marriage. But kindness is the other side of that. Kindness, on the other hand, glues couples together. Research has shown that kindness is one of the most important predictors of satisfaction and stability in a marriage. Kindness makes each partner feel cared for, understood, and validated, feel loved. There's a great deal of evidence showing the more someone receives or witnesses kindness, the more they will be kind themselves, which leads to upward spirals of love and generosity in a relationship. So what is it, ladies, in the marriage? Is it contempt or kindness? Both husbands and wives can take that one to heart. Is it contempt or kindness that is driving your relationships? Criticism or consideration? Critically important to the health of any marriage. Father, The challenges are real. We all know it. But your Spirit has directed us to principles that help us to live out and be successful, to live out our faith and be successful in our marriages. And I pray for each and every wife here today. Give them your sustaining grace. May they hope in you and not in their husbands. May they trust, Lord, in your power and your Spirit to take all things and make them new. And may they live out the example that Jesus set for them when he came to this earth, to surrender, to release themselves, to serve husband and family. In Jesus' name, amen.